Hello, and welcome to Animation Meditation, a weekly deep dive discussion about all things animation. My name is Andy. With me, as always, I have my lovely co-host, Nadia.
Hello!
And joining us this week, co-host of Nerdcraft Nation, Chris Walker.
Hi, everyone.
How are y'all doing?
Excited about the snow. We're supposed to have a foot of snow, which is super, super exciting. Dogs love the snow, so I always get excited because I get to go outside and play like a little kid again and run around and get all riled up. So, open for that tomorrow.
I am not in New England anymore, so good luck with that. Right, very much happy about not being in an area where it snows a lot since I'm in Seattle, Washington now. So,
did you ceremoniously burn all of your winter clothes?
No, you need that here. It actually was like 40 degrees today, I think. So,
oh no, it's 40 degrees out there. It's been,
yeah, you need a quality jacket out here.
10 degrees over here.
Jesus Christ, did one of you lose a finger? Is that what you're telling me? I'm not able shaming anybody. I'm just genuinely, I've seen it happen. Very scary.
So this week, we are going to be discussing Voltron Legendary Defender, DreamWorks Netflix series. What has been your exposure to either this or the original 1980s show?
I grew up going to Trinidad and Tobago all the time because that's where my mom's side is from. And they used to get a lot of shows from like the 80s really late. So I saw the original like Voltron show as a kid on like Saturday morning television, and that's how I found it. Granted, I also saw like Power Rangers, and the crossover just felt very connected. So both caught my interest, and yeah, that's how I found it. I've watched, I think, every iteration of it except for the one that was on Nickelodeon, just because I was in college and I just didn't have access to a TV like that. But I've always thought it was really, really fun. Like, just very colorful and fun and just very wild and out there.
Nadia?
So this is interesting for me because before I started watching the show, I had a few people either recommend it to me or just yell at me for like an hour about all of the feelings that they have about the show. So I feel like I went into it with a lot of other people's already piled on opinions. I remember, I think this summer, Andy, you recommended it to me. Pretty much you were like, it starts off great and then it gets real bad. And I was like, great, that's a fun thing to know about a show before you start watching it. And then I had a coworker and we were just talking about animated shows that we watch, and he mentioned Voltron to me, and I said, oh, that's one that I, you know, should probably watch. One of my friends recommended it to me. And he literally just like ranted for an hour about just like all of the things that the show messed up on and all of the sort of like spirals it goes down in the later seasons. So it took me a while to actually watch it. I kept putting it off because I was like, well, if it gets really bad, like, I don't know if I want to watch it. It sounds like, because all I'd ever heard was people yelling all the negative stuff that they didn't like about the show at me. So I finally started it when Andy was like, we're going to have to record an episode, Nadia, it's going to happen. And I was like, oh my God, crap. So I started watching it. And in all honesty, I have made it through a season and a half as of recording. So I haven't actually seen the whole show, embarrassingly enough. That's where I'm at.
But you know what? We're going to be talking about it, and those live reactions, that's what I'm here for from you, honestly. Yeah,
it's going to be great. I'm gonna have a lot to say. Most of it will be unfounded, and then I'll have a lot to listen to, and it'll be great. And for those of you who haven't seen the show, guess what? Not alone. I'm right there with you. So it's going to be great.
Yeah, and for those of us who have not seen the show, we should probably do a quick summary over what we're talking about.
I think that as the person who has seen the most episodes, I should be the one to do that summary. Yes,
please, Nadia, go over our summary. I would like to hear this.
Voltron. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a summary, and I'm going to not look up any of the character names or any of the things that I forgot, and it's going to be great. Okay. Voltron is a show with a bunch of little fellas who are at space camp. In space things, and then this big fella is like, I'm here, I made it back, I was on a big expedition, you thought I was dead, but I'm here. And they're like, whoa, oh my God. And then they all go on a bunch of adventures, and they discover, oh my God, we're the paladins of Voltron, and they each have a giant metal lion that they pilot, and they're all different colors, and then all of the lions combine into a giant superpower weapon called Voltron, which is pretty cool because he still has lion hands, and the Voltron is the thing that's going to save everyone from a bad evil guy who is just colonizing the heck out of everything and just getting mass genocide. There you have it.
Pretty good summary. I would say that about gets all the beats of the show. So
I would have just described it as like a cartoon cheap version of Power Rangers, but that's honestly.
I also did not grow up watching Power Rangers, so.
Oh, man.
I know. I'm very much, like, my own personal taste is, I don't know, I'm not into the whole big battle-y things. I know that's fun, and I look at it, and I'm like, this looks fun, and I know this is good, and it's super exciting and colorful, and I, like, enjoyed that stuff in Avatar and She-Ra, but I think it's because it wasn't as much of the focus.
That's fair, actually. Whereas, there's like, so much going on Avatar.
Yeah, and there's so much else that's happening that the fight, and I also grew up doing martial arts, so I feel like I was always really excited with the fights, because I was like, and because I could like recognize all of the movements, and it all had all of this like emotional meaning to me. With the other shows that focus on these big wars and fights, it's just not typically what I go towards. I do really like the kind of like Saturday morning cartoony vibe that Voltron has. Like, I feel like it's a show that I'd love to like wake up to and like make my breakfast and watch in the mornings, but it's like a, like, that is the association I have with it. So watching it outside of that context wasn't really my cup of tea.
Yes, I had also not ever really grown up watching any sort of Power Rangers-esque show. Voltron, I was aware of it throughout most of my life, but it was never really on my radar until Legends of Korra and their announcement that the same team would be working on Voltron.
That's right.
So going in, I didn't really have a connection to Voltron that most did from like the 80s and the 90s with the Power Rangers and the actual original 80s run of the show. But I did have a connection to the creators and the artists who had given this show its current aesthetic appeal, which is very similar to that of Korra. And I went in really invested. I loved the first season. I obsessed over it for pretty much as long as it ran. And I think I dropped out of it at about season 6, when I finally accepted that this was not a show that was worth keeping up with. And then it wasn't until quarantine started where I picked it back up and finally finished season 7 and 8 and sort of had to hate watch my way through those.
I think that's right around the time that you told me that this show existed, and I was like, what? They updated
I think when I told you that the show existed, I had not seen season 8. At that point.
Yeah, you hadn't seen season 8, but you were like, the first couple seasons are good. Where I'm at right now is it's in the shitter. And I was like, all right, sure. I can get behind this. I can watch this. I actually really enjoyed the first 3 seasons. Honestly, I like the animation style here. Like, I really like the animation style here. It actually pops for me, and it's very different from what I've watched recently. What was it? From Legend of Korra. From trying to remember what other show. I wanted to start watching She-Ra, but I haven't had the energy yet. From Young Justice, I've been rewatching Young Justice for something else I'm working on, and it's so different. It's got a good space epic, like, animation style for me. And from, like, season 4 on, I just, like, start to lose a lot of gas for it. But, like, I can see some of the things that they're doing, some of the more political elements that they're doing, and it's, like, it's there, it's thoughtful, it's got a lot of intrigue, but it doesn't. Something about this show just doesn't get all the connective tissue going, and it just irks me so much. Also, seasons 3 and 4 and seasons 5 and 6, I literally just ran through in single days thinking that I was watching one season at a time, because those 4 seasons are each like 6 or 7 episodes, and I just kept going, this show isn't that long. What's going on here? When I get to season 7, is it just going to be an epic? And I realized right after starting season 7, like maybe 3 episodes in, I was in a different like entire storyline. I was like, what the what is going on here? What am I doing? am I going to be done soon? Was this worth it? I dedicated time to this. But yeah, I finished it, and I don't feel like a better person for doing that. I just know that I finished it.
I'll be honest, I'm probably not going to.
I don't blame you.
I feel like I should probably at least finish season two, and I might do that, but...
That's worth it, actually, in my personal opinion. That is very worth it.
I think it's good, because like I said, it's not typically... Like, I watch a lot of animated shows, and a lot of shows geared towards kids. But this isn't necessarily, like, the niche that I typically go into, so I think it's good just personally to, like, branch out a bit and, you know, like, give it the time. Yeah, I don't think that I would have ever watched it if I hadn't had to.
Oh, and I'm sure that probably colored your perspective on the show as well.
It did. Also, the fact that all I knew going in was just people telling me all of the stuff they hated about it. Like, that's definitely not a great way to enter into... I mean, it's a good way to enter into a show if people are like, oh, I wasn't a huge fan of it, it wasn't great, and then you watch it and it's, like, amazing, and you're like, oh, wow, that's exciting. Like, my expectations were totally... Like, it was way better than I thought, and that's an exciting surprise. When you're told that it's bad and you watch it and you don't enjoy it, it's just kind of a letdown. You're like, all right.
I know I have been fairly negative on this show.
Yeah, Andy, I thought you were overselling that. And then I started watching and I was like, this is pretty good. Wait a second. Wait one damn second. Andy might be selling this right on right now.
I'm going to be completely honest. The show's not perfect. I think the first few seasons definitely have a good foundation and a strong start for what they're trying to do, and it definitely created a community and a fandom that is promising to some degree. That being said, I think that this show is extremely important. It was one of the first animated shows to come straight to streaming and do the whole, we're going to drop a season on Netflix and move forward from there. And I don't think that shows like She-Ra would have existed without this show and without the experimentation that DreamWorks had releasing this the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the representation that you get in a lot of future shows, especially ones developed by DreamWorks, come directly from the experimentations and the mistakes that they made with this show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of what the other shows from DreamWorks and Netflix are, other than She-Ra. Trollhunters also.
Kipo too, isn't Kipo and the Wonder Beast DreamWorks? Yeah.
Kipo and the Wonder Beast DreamWorks.
Do you think that, okay, so I think that's true. One of the reasons why I was so angry, I still can't get over like the queer baiting of the show. I think that's the thing that like two people have told me that, and that just like the show was dead to me after that was something that I heard. and I haven't even interacted with that in any way yet. Like
Nick Jonas was there? What?
What?
I heard queer baiting and I was like, Nick Jonas was there? What?
I was just like, why are you here? No, but I was just like, that just made me angry. But do you think that the backlash they got for that was something that forced them to actually have legitimate queer representation in their following shows like Kipo and She-Ra?
It was a combination of the backlash that they got for that. And later on, so Voltron, since I'm aware that Nadia, you have not seen the show. In the final episode of the show, I guess this is a spoiler.
You know, if you want something really crappy spoiled for you, I guess that's where we are now.
There are definitely some issues of queer baiting. I think we should give our recommendations and move into the spoiler section at this point,
because
I definitely want to go further into this. So this is where we would generally rate the show, Chris. I don't like giving hard ratings for really anything. And I think this is a show that gives you a perfect example of why. You know, it's like if I were to give this show a like straight out of 10, it'd probably somewhere be in like a 5 or a 6. And yeah. I think that's not really representative of seasons 1 and 2. Season 8 definitely brings a lot of that score down. So the way I would recommend this show is I would say seasons 1 and 2, I would recommend generally hands down if you're a fan of like Saturday morning cartoons, if you're into the whole mecha Power Rangers, that kind of style of show. If you get through seasons 1 and 2 and you are invested in the characters and you care about the story that they're telling, I would absolutely recommend continuing through seasons 3 and 4. 5 through 8, I cannot for the life of me say are worth watching. Unless you really want to just hate watch something or just watch a train wreck. I think seasons 5 and 8 have a lot of promise to them. I think they bring up a lot of very good ideas, but they do not execute them well at all.
I actually completely agree with that. I honestly, seasons 5 through 8 are better watched while stoned because like you just, it's just like a nice rush of colors in your face. And like, that's it, honestly. But like seasons 1 through 4 actually pop really well for me, at least dialogue and story-wise. And I like, it finishes out well at four. Like, if they cut the show off at the end of season four, I'd have been like, that was good. That was worth it. I can live with what I've seen here.
Fair. I think they could cut the show off at season five, episode two. Just have that be the end.
Yeah, that's right.
And for some reason, that isn't like a season finale. I don't understand.
Is that where the final fight with Lothar and his father?
Yep.
Okay, yep. Yeah, I agree with that, actually.
Nadia, how would you recommend the season and a half that you've watched so far?
Well, considering that I have only seen a season and a half and also have only been able to have the time these past couple of weeks to watch when I am, like, cooking for myself the morning or afternoon, I feel like I haven't been able to give it my full attention. But my immediate gut reaction was that it wasn't a show that I think I would have continued, even though I, like, understand collectively that the first two seasons are good, and I've heard you say that they're good, and I've heard other people whose opinions I respect say that they're good. I agree with Chris that the animation is really fun. I love the colors. I think that's great, but it just wasn't really something specifically that drew me in. I was never a kid who grew up with, you know, like the Power Rangers or the big battle-y Mechabot shows, so it didn't have the kind of like nostalgia appeal for me. I also typically have a tough time watching shows that focus a lot on fighting. And I know that Voltron has other good stuff. I know that it has relationships between the characters and it has other stuff that has grown and developed over the first couple seasons. But for me, it was just too focused on the fighting. And that wasn't something that particularly interested me. And I wasn't invested in the characters enough to really care. So I think I had a tough time with it for that reason. But I do think that it is genuinely fun and, like, again, if you like the Saturday morning cartoon vibes and you remember stuff like Power Rangers from your own childhood, I think it's worth a fun watch. It just wasn't up my own personal alley, simply because of the tastes that I tend to ascribe to.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So
I get that.
Moving forward, we are going to be discussing Voltron with full spoilers.
For you and for me, friends.
If you have not seen the show, it is available on Netflix.
All four seasons available on Netflix.
Yeah. Unlike the original series, which you can really not find anywhere. Yeah. Got to find those VHSs on eBay. That's what you got to do. I'm telling you.
You got to find a VHS player.
Oh, man.
Good luck.
Yo, I know a guy at CTS and BU. He can hook it up for you. You just gotta give me a call. I'll leave my phone number in the show notes for everybody.
The library that I work at only just recently got rid of all of their VHSs.
No!
Yeah, like very recently. And there are still people who would like check them out. So moving on, folks.
Future is now.
Yep. Hate it.
Stream or die.
So now that we're in the spoiler section, the last episode of Voltron Legendary Defender has an epilogue where we get to see the future of each of the characters and where they all end up going. This show, with that episode, does kind of the same thing that that Korra did, in that they have a canonically gay character in the literal last second of the show be in a confirmed gay relationship.
It's literally the last episode?
It's
yeah.
What Voltron does significantly worse than Korra did is that instead of being like an established character, this is Shiro with an unnamed character who does not get a speaking line and whose actual name is only available in the subtitles.
Yeah.
Aren't they also dead?
Oh, no, this is a different person.
Oh my god, wait. You get to see Shiro with two different people who are supposed to be...
Earlier in the series, there is an episode where all of the paladins come home from Earth. Shiro comes home to learn that his significant other had died in the war that they had unexpectedly caused by introducing the concept of Earth to the Galran fleet.
Uh-oh.
And the scene that we get is Shiro lamenting over Adam's death, and we just see him like have put his hand up to a plaque and like he genuinely thinks that this death was his fault. And then we get a flashback where they're just talking in a room, and that's all we get. There's no actual indication that those two were in a relationship.
I thought
they were just best friends. I honestly saw that and I was like, oh man, they're just really good friends. That's awesome. Good for you, buddy.
So the creators of the show did come out and say that is They introduced that episode. They were like, in the next episode, we will meet Shiro's boyfriend.
Will you, DreamWorks?
In terms of, like, queer baiting, this is the queer baitingest queer baiting we can get.
They were like, God.
This is a canonically gay character. We will meet their partner. And then we get a scene of them just talking and then him just remembering that he died.
Oh my God. That makes me so angry. Also, I have no idea what you're talking about in terms of the war, but I can imagine if Shiro knew that he had started some type of war, would in some way express to his dear friends concern for the fact that he has someone he cares very deeply about who is on Earth.
And everybody does that at different points, too, which makes it even harder to just, like, watch it and be like,
There's this whole, when all the paladins come back from Earth, there's this whole scene where, like, all of the paladins get to reunite with their family, and Hunk is the one paladin who doesn't, and he gets this whole, like, very deep arc where he's like, I need to find my family, I need to know they're safe, I need to do this for them, and that's honestly one of the better aspects of the later seasons, and we don't get that for any of the other paladins, we don't really get that, and we don't get that for Shiro at all.
Oh my God. Okay, so now that I'm all fired up, tell me about the stupid thing that you get in the last episode, where he gets another partner.
So Shiro's end card is he gets married to another person, they are a male of color who has no name, and then they kiss, and then it cuts to black.
It's a picture from his wedding.
From his wedding, yeah. It's literally just a picture from his wedding.
Still?
Is it even them kissing?
No, it's them kissing. You get to see them kiss on screen.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Damn.
But that's still stupid. I mean, at least, because with Korra, you didn't even get to see them kiss, but, like, you got to see their relationship develop in a, like, substantial way.
Yeah. You see their friendship play out. You see them, like, grow together as people and, like, work through issues.
This is, like, the opposite, where it's, like, you're going to get a kiss, but you're not going to get anything else. Ha, 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 ha. I'm very mad. That's so stupid. No, this is why I was the single thing that makes me the maddest about the show.
One thing this show does with a lot of promise is Shiro is a gay war veteran who suffers from PTSD and is later on disabled and is later on revealed to have a terminal illness. There's so many like representational check marks that they just check. And they don't really do anything with any of those things.
It's like, it's frustrating because it's exciting because you're like, okay, we're moving into a space where at least these boxes are checked. It just reminds you of the more that you want. So like you said earlier, like this may have been a show that paved way for more substantial representation. And that's great, but I'm still so frustrated that they just didn't get it.
I think it was a combination of the backlash that they received from this. And the fact that they were able to show things like two men kissing on screen and not get backlash from international audiences.
I want to say I get that, but I actually don't. Because, like, just giving you the picture isn't a full experience. Like, what Andy just said, they check off all these, what both of you actually just said, they check off all these boxes, but it's not a full experience. It's just checking off boxes. And it takes you out of it at times. Like, it doesn't add any personality. And Shiro has personality for days, kind of. Like, he's got the military man personality, which is personality in and of itself. But, like, you could see him soften his ridges and things like that and have to really grapple with himself. And
he's the hero archetype.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's very clear that, especially in the earlier seasons, it's difficult for him to be open emotionally, especially when he's in this position of trying to be a mentor figure to these paladins. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get this idea that they want to tell this story where he sort of learns to soften up throughout, but they never really have the opportunity to actually delve deeper into that aspect of Shiro.
So I have a question, just because I literally haven't seen the show. So it sounds like with Shiro, they do try to give him more of a, like, growth and development arc in terms of his shifting character. Do we get that? And you mentioned also that Hunk kind of gets that when he's looking for his family, but do we get that with the other paladins? My issue with the first couple seasons is, like, I didn't have as much character growth as I need to enjoy a show. is that something that they get better at? Or is that one of the things that kind of falls to the wayside in the later seasons?
I think that's a good segue into discussing just the paladins in general.
Yeah.
Because we can get into that with each paladin.
Okay, I have some strong feelings right off the bat, and I hate Lance. Put that out there. I hate him. I hate his character. I hate the whole, like, haha, we're going to have this male character whose, like, entire identity is around, like, flirting with the only female characters in the show, and that's all we get from him. And I find it disgusting, and it creeps me out every time he opens his mouth, and I'm really angry that that was something that carried over from the original show into the remake.
So who's your favorite paladin?
Probably Pidge or Hunk. I feel like I relate to both of them the most.
I mean, Pidge is best girl, putting that out there.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, I also just, like, appreciate, I am also somebody who cares very, very deeply about food and does not like being uncomfortable. So, like, pretty much everything that Hunk does, I'm like, yup. Same dude. Same.
Yeah.
I did appreciate that. I honestly don't really have strong feelings about any of the other ones. I just hate Lance. I find him repugnant. Who are the other folks that we have? There's the angsty black-haired dude.
Keith.
Is he the one that a lot of people ship with Shiro?
Keith and Shiro is a very common ship. Lance and Keith are romantically coded throughout the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Honestly, if that was going to be the queer representation, Keith and Lance, I think that would have worked so much better.
I would have been into that too, because I think that would have been an interesting way of taking Lance's weird, like, hypersexuality with Princess Allura and making it make sense and, like, getting the chance to unpack toxic masculinity, right? Like,
exactly,
talking about the fact that he's using this as a coping mechanism because he doesn't know how to approach his own sexuality, and then having that be the growth that he unlearns would be so fantastic. And they're, like, if we're looking at, just to kind of pull from another show, Avatar, Sokka goes through a similar arc where we first meet him and he's this sort of, like, obnoxious, honestly pretty sexist dude who can't really get out of himself, and he grows and learns so much over the show, and I feel like that would have been a great thing to get with Lance.
Oh, hell yeah. That's actually a great analogy. I was literally thinking of, they did this in the X-Men comics where they made Iceman gay, and they literally took the time to just unpack, like, really why he was the way he was, literally unpacking his toxic masculinity, his hypersexuality. Granted, they did it in a very messy way because they brought his teenage self to the present, and there's a lot of weird time travel shit going on there, but it worked out, honestly. They had they had the older self talking with the younger self and really unpacking what's wrong, what their issues were with family and with just, like, relationships and what's going on. And there are already, like, a number of queer X-Men, as it were, but they really took the time to just, like, be like, hey, listen, we're gonna go and take this guy who's an original character, who's an original X-Men, and just not really modernize him, but more or less just go and say, hey, listen, this has been in the background the entire time. Let's round out this character to who he really is.
Yeah, and I think that's such a valuable thing to take the time to do, because there's value in just showing all of these characters who have already sort of undergone that journey and who are already in that space where they're, you know, like, awesomely masculine and they understand how to express themselves, but there's a lot of people aren't there yet. And there's also value in showing growth that somebody has to go through to get there. And it makes me so angry that they had this perfect chance to do that. And they just don't. And they let Lance be gross and awful. And I don't know if that's something that carries through the whole show. I just remember being, like, immediately turned off the first time he spoke. And then just never, ever, ever liking him any better.
That's fair. Lance does soften a little bit, but, like, I think it's just, like, you find out more about his background and who he is as a person, and you see him struggle a little bit. But
yeah, you get to see him with his family, and his family's like, oh, he's always been trying to be this lady killer, but he's really a soft person on the inside. He's not that kind of person.
Yeah, it just bothers me when you have a show that's geared towards kids that, like, shows that, because it's such a harmful thing that people don't always grow out of.
Absolutely.
It's just, like, the weird entitlement with the female characters, too, where, like, the first thing that we really get out of Princess Allura is the fact that Lance is obsessed with her. Like, I'm sure she also grows as a character out of that, but it, like, colors the way that I felt about her when I first met her.
Does it change your opinion that Lance and Allura end up in a relationship by the end of the series?
I hate that. That makes me mad. That makes me so mad. I hate that with all of my heart. I was gonna ask if that was something that happened to be like, haha, I hope they didn't do that. Are you kidding
me? Okay. Hear me out. What if we took this character and we had them get together and then like within the same season we kill her off and then just have Lance just live the rest of his life as like this half Altaian, half like this is just what my life is, just remembering the memory of this person.
Are you kidding me?
What if that was how this ended?
Is that actually how it ends?
Yes, it is.
Oh my god! You're saying that Princess Allura this whole time was pretty much set up to be the thing that Lance thirsts after, and as soon as he gets with her, she has no value anymore and she gets killed?
Effectively, yeah.
I am literally hate sweating in my little chair right now, just like aggressively warm and aggressively moist because I am so upset.
And when it hits you that that's what's going to happen, I literally just remember sitting there going, what the shit did I just, what am I watching right now? Like, how did we get here to this point? And it's like, the character growth just goes out the window, and it wasn't that much to begin with, but still.
So, at the end of season two, Shiro was originally supposed to die, and the executives were very happy with the show's performance and were very happy with specifically Shiro as a character. And they saw that people really enjoyed Shiro as a character. So they wanted Shiro to stay in the show to some capacity. That's not speculation. The following is speculation. Because the rest of the series had already, or at least the next few seasons had already been storyboarded and were already, the story was already written with Shiro as a dead character, it feels very much like they copy and pasted Shiro over another character to save time, money, and space, and that had drastic implications for the actual story moving forward. And I think you feel those implications even up towards the end.
Okay, I have a weird question, because I know that you mentioned that the creators of Voltron, before the episode where you get to see Shiro, like the flashback with his dead boyfriend, they like announced, hey, this is where you're going to get to see Shiro and his boyfriend. So had they already, by season two, come out and said, hey, this is supposed to be a queer character?
I actually don't know.
I'm trying to figure out if they would have killed him off before any of that happened. Just been like, yeah, haha, of course he was supposed to be gay. And, you know, like pull a JK and say that somebody is gay after they're already out of.
I'm actually double checking this now, but I think that happens in season seven is when you really find out.
Yeah, we meet Shiro's boyfriend in season seven. I don't know if Shiro was confirmed to be canonically gay by season two.
Trying to figure out if it would have been better if he had just died and like none of the queer baiting had ever happened, but then also you wouldn't have had that representation at all. I would have just been mad either way. We'll just settle with that. Either way, I would have been grumpy.
That's fair. But I don't come to my Saturday morning cartoon of Power Rangers level stories to get representation. The fact that it's there can be gravy, but yeah. I don't need it, you know?
Yeah, I see that.
I think that I'm getting to the point where I'm such an angry liberal that I do. Like, if a show doesn't have it, I just get really angry. You know when you, like, don't realize you want something until you experience a show where it, like, doesn't quite have it, and you're like, hey, why don't I like this? Oh, yeah, it's because it doesn't have this thing. I think that I've gotten to the point where, like, I don't care as much if you don't have a queer character. I'm not as interested.
I definitely enjoy shows more that have this representation than ones that don't. I definitely agree with you on that.
I just need it to be authentic. Like, I'm not queer. I just want it to be honest and authentic. And for, like I want it to all just make sense. And, like, for it to not just feel forced in any way, shape, or form. Because that, you're, like, trying to deliver a great story or just a story altogether. It shouldn't feel like it's shoehorned in there for ratings or for money or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that's true. Because I'm trying to think, and like, there are definitely shows that I have loved very deeply that don't necessarily have like the LGBTQ representation. Yeah, like thinking about Avatar, like there aren't.
Oh, yeah.
Korra excluded. We don't have a canonically character in Avatar, and it's one of my favorite shows in the whole world.
Korra does also run into the issue of it not really having representation until the
literal. But yeah, that's a whole other. That's a whole other queer baiting thing that we can get really angry about, or I can get really angry about. But no, I agree with Chris. I think that if there's a character that is canonically queer, it does make me, and it's done well, it makes me enjoy the show a lot more. It also definitely makes me enjoy the show less if they kind of, again, like, do the checkbox where they're like, here you go. Here's a... I'm so torn because I know that it's still important to have that representation. Like, as we're still in a space where we need, like, anything that we can get to just move forward as a culture. I'm torn between, like, being happy that it's there in just any capacity, but then also wanting to try to hold people accountable for doing it in a way that is authentic and respectful.
So one thing that I really enjoyed about this show, and one thing that I felt the show did well in the earlier seasons and that could potentially show a lot of promise, was that the Lions themselves were this sort of vehicle, no pun intended.
No, that was intended. It's all right.
For character growth. Anytime their pilot came to terms with themselves and learned something about themselves and developed as a character, the lion would reward them with either a newfound ability, either in their suit or the lion itself, or a new skill to be able to perform better in battle or as Voltron.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was an interesting concept. And I love, like, they do this with Pidge. I can't remember if this is in the first two seasons, but there's an episode where Pidge, like, learns to connect with the Earth and learns to connect with the Green Lion a lot stronger, and that causes them to move a lot faster and be able to develop a new weapon. And it's the using Voltron and the Lions as this means of developing the characters is something that I wish had gone throughout all 8 seasons. But there's a point where you can't really do that, and that point is when you start playing this sort of musical chairs with the
lion. Yeah, wait, so do they not always pilot the same lion?
You know, you would think, given the premise of the show and the concept of the lions and how they work, you would think that would be the case.
Yeah, that's what I assumed, and the fact that their suits literally match the color of their lion.
For a while. Not for that long.
Do the suits change color too? Or do they all get, like, so, oh my god, do they get an outfit change?
So here's the thing. After Shiro's quote-unquote death at the end of season 2, they have to come to terms with the fact that they no longer have the head of Voltron. And Shiro, at some point during those first two seasons, had come to Keith and said, Keith, if something happens to me, and he implies that he knows something will, that he was passing the baton off to Keith as the Red Lion to be the Black Lion when he does pass away. And Keith reluctantly takes it. He doesn't want it, but he accepts it, which leaves the Red Lion empty. And from there, they don't really have a pilot for any of the lions. Allura tries to connect with the Red Lion and fails.
Which was her father's lion.
It was her father's lion, that is true.
Did her bad sad. Aww.
Yeah. It's a nice character development point, too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very good. I think this switch was done very well. I think Keith moving into the leadership position that he deserved but did not want. Lance ends up moving into the Red Lion because he's developed to that. At that point, he's developed enough to be considered Keith's right-hand man and has matured to a degree that he was no longer really necessary for the Blue Lion. And at that point, they just sort of accepted it. They just went out with 4 lions. That was what they were going to do. And at some point, they say, we need Voltron. Allura begs and pleads with the Blue Lion, and the Blue Lion accepts her.
Okay, so Allura...
So now 3 of the 5 paladins are in completely different lions.
Their outfit colors change?
No.
No.
Allura wears a pink suit, and then...
Aw, man!
Keith and Lance continue to wear their blue and red.
Wait a minute. Okay, because they switched around. So I was going to say the outfits match the color of the... but they just moved around, so she didn't have the original outfit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because someone else... Ah, gosh darn it.
I think that original change would have been fine had they kept that.
Oh. But you're not
later
done.
On in the series, we find Shiro, and Shiro takes back his position as the Black Lion, and Keith just sort of... disappears.
Actually?
So there's this whole subplot where the Galra are established to be not all bad. There is a subsect of Galra who decide that they do not want to be under the rule of Zarkon and create what they call the Blade of Malmora, which is this sort of rebellion within the Galra fleet. And Keith learns that he is half Galra. And Allura gets this whole arc where she's like, I'm racist against Galras because the Galra nation destroyed my entire home planet and everyone I loved, and I can't trust you as a person because you are half Galra. And she eventually gets over that and learns that she shouldn't be prejudiced. But Keith decides to work with the Blade of Malmora to learn more about his Galran ancestry and enact these sort of like rebellious covert op agent missions while the rest of the team act as Voltron.
Yeah. He's more the Black Ops while they're the more forward presenting team at the time. And it's, I actually don't think that it works that great because of all the jumping around that they've already done. And also, they should have just let Shiro be dead, but still.
I think that that's a storyline that they had to come up with on the fly to get Keith off screen. It is my speculation that the Blade of Malmora subplot was something that they came up with on the fly, and it was a means to get Keith off screen because Keith was originally supposed to stay the Black Lion for good, but they needed somewhere to copy-paste Shiro into the script.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so it seems like a lot of the problems come because the motivations of the right, and again, this is totally, like, you know, why would I know that this is true? But their motivation was more about keeping certain characters in to finish the story as opposed to, like, what actually made sense for those specific characters.
I think it was more budgetary reasons. Like, I'm not an expert in terms of making shows, but it takes months, if not years, to animate a season of a show. Yeah. And the fact that they had to come up with these changes after all of the storyboards had been made and produced.
So there must have been a lot of fan focus on Shiro for them to even consider keeping him in the show then. Because I'm just like, I think the gravity of that choice is really landing on me.
The DreamWorks executives saw that Shiro was selling well, and it was because they were able to market to an older audience because he was one of the older characters, they demanded that he stay in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. So it all comes back to corporate greed.
That being said, I think the Blade of Malmora add this sort of interesting aspect to the show where you get to see that this isn't a black and white war. There are multiple sides to the issues that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I genuinely appreciated that. The fact that it took one of our lead characters and one of the characters that we hadn't quite seen develop enough at that point, I felt, just taken off screen to be able to keep this character that should have been dead to begin with is a little bit annoying, but this is the story that we got.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do think it is an interesting, you know, space for them to, like, you know, have a character that does really grapple with identity. Because, like I said, in the first couple seasons, I didn't feel like I got the character growth that I wanted, and it kind of sounds like that is some interesting character growth.
Absolutely, and I definitely agree that, like, the first two seasons don't do much for character growth. It's a lot more, we're establishing the world, we're establishing where everything is and how everything is going to be.
Yeah.
For the coming, like, they're developing a space opera, they need to world build some bit before they establish the characters all that much, but it definitely suffers, especially when you have this ensemble of five different characters that you need to flesh out, and you've spent so much time on not doing that.
Yeah.
But, like, it's also kind of playing with house money, because those first two seasons, there's not as much character development, but it feels like, all right, we're just going to get to that sooner or later. We got time for it. And that's not a healthy thing at times.
Absolutely.
Unless you really, really plan on doing it, and the show execution wise doesn't really get through it for everybody, but it tries.
They try.
Yeah. There's it effort.
That's good.
Yeah. I would have rather just have Shiro stay alive and make him a plant, or have Keith be a plant at some point, and you just, like, roll the dice on that, and you probably get some crazy ideas. Probably have to kill someone off at some point, and that probably would have worked out great.
This show definitely has a ton of promise throughout, and there's some very good elements. Like, I know I'm going to sound very negative on this show throughout, but I do I like this show. I'm going to be honest. I do really like this show.
It's better than the Nicktoons remake from 2011. And that's like, that's a real bar to have at the minimum.
I did find some of the characters interesting in the first couple episodes, which is, you know, like, again, the bright colors and the kind of funny characters.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. I think, okay, this is totally random, but I'm going to forget it if I don't say it now. I think one of my favorite parts in the first season was when they all see the suits and Hunk is like, yeah, that suit's not going to fit me. And then they just never address it. And then the next scene, he's just in the suit. And they like never, you never get to see like, oh, they like shift to fit your body. It's just literally never addressed. And he's just there in the suit. And I thought that was just, I thought it was hysterical.
I felt represented. I literally was like, did you use cooking grease or some coconut oil to get you in there, buddy? What did you do? Because that's my technique every now and again.
So yellow is my favorite color. So I feel like immediately I was like, yeah, me and Hunk, we're going to get along.
Yeah. Keith also gets this whole meeting with his mother, and who turns out to be one of the Blade of Malmora. And he has a lot of abandonment issues going in, and then finally meeting his mother and learning the story of how she had to leave him and how she had brought the blue lion to Earth and hid it there and was protecting it. It was very interesting for Keith. And then they just sort of dropped it. Like, this show does a lot of, like, this is a very good start. This is a very good foundation for what you're trying to do. And then the follow-through almost always just falls flat.
I feel like that's an issue when you have a big cast like this. Not big cast, big cast of characters like this, where you want to balance the character development for everybody, but you have to be very delicate. Sometimes you should just flush it out in one episode and then transition to the next character, but then circle back sooner or later. And also, pretty sure that happens in the seasons 3 through 6, which are just very short and all really should have just been one season. So they drop the ball very quickly. I'm trying to think. I've talked about this before in Young Justice. That's a big, big issue for me, that there's not enough character development of the smaller characters, because it's around, I want to say, like 20 different heroes, and you just don't know what you're going to get every day.
Yeah, yeah. Young Justice sort of had this large ensemble of characters, and each of them have their own interesting aspects, but you never really get enough of each.
Yeah. And I would have enjoyed just like break off like smaller team episodes that aren't the main team focus, and just give us like the leader being like the main hero and giving us their development and like little things for everybody else. And I thought I would be sufficient with that. And it didn't work for me, honestly. Granted, the development of Beast Boy into a mature hero is nice, actually.
I definitely agree with that. Especially when he has to be like a public figure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's very different. That's way more based on the comics than you get with Teen Titans.
I'm trying to think of other shows where they've had a larger cast and I felt like they have done a good job in developing the characters, and I'm
literally stumping myself on this too.
Yeah, I mean, She-Ra kind of does it in that, like, I'm trying to think of the characters that do really get the development, and like She-Ra and Adora, and we get a lot of development from Entrapta and Scorpia and Glimmer. And that's 5 full characters that get a lot of development, but they do definitely get it in different moments, which is why it works, because they're sort of, you're pulled through with this core that gets development, and then sort of slowly through individual episodes, you start to see the growth in the other characters. But then it also definitely leaves, there are certain princesses that don't really get a focus. I was kind of okay with that.
A continuation of the lessons that DreamWorks learned from this show.
Yeah. Definitely, I can definitely see the focus.
Definitely true.
And She-Ra and like Voltron feel really similar to me. Like, I know they're both remakes of older shows, which maybe is why they have that vibe. And they're also both like, you know, a group or a team is united in fighting this very specific evil, which is essentially just, you know, this out-of-worldly race that is coming in to colonize / just destroy other planets. So like, I think, you know, and even like the villain and She-Ra, you know, originally Hordak, and then you have, I don't remember, in one of the first seasons, it was like Sendak or something was introduced, and I was like, all right, I see the similarities here. But
I mean, we can go further into the antagonists of this show. Yeah, Sendak is sort of this like weird sub-Zarkon, but like strictly worse than Zarkon, which makes sense from a narrative perspective to have him introduced early as like, I am Zarkon's right-hand man. I'm here to kill you. I'm the person you have to deal with before you get to Zarkon. Later on in the series, he just sort of takes Zarkon's role. And it feels very strange.
That's super odd.
It didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, like, in terms of the chain of command, once Zarkon is gone, of course, Endak would take that position, but he's just always this less intimidating version of the evil that we already defeated.
Yeah, which I think is interesting, because that's something that Shira does really well, is it gives you a villain, and you're like, this is the central villain, and you're like, okay, cool, I trust that they're the villain, and then they're like, whoop, guess what, it goes even bigger, and now there's another villain that is in charge of the person that you thought was the, so it like grows and develops, where you're like, oh, well, I was scared of the first villain, so now I must be intimidated by the villain who is in charge of bullying the villain that I thought was the main villain. Like, it grows in its intensity as you kind of go up the ladder of command. Make any sense to go in reverse.
So let's say hypothetically we introduced a character into this show that was the son of both Zarkon and an Altaian, and actively tried to introduce more peaceful aspects to this world conquering empire. What if we made a character like that?
Wait a minute. let me get this straight. Son of the big bad guy.
Yeah.
And an Altaian, which is what Princess Allura is.
Yep.
And their role is to be like, do what?
So because they are technically the prince to Zarkon, they are in theory the next in command. And attempt to take over the role of conqueror and do so with the intention of presenting themselves as a more peaceful race.
They're still like, I'm gonna conquer the world just nicely?
No, it's more like we're going to be more like Alexander the Great, where we're going to conquer, but we're going to allow the existing structures of each civilization to do their own thing.
Yeah.
So they're just gonna manifest destiny?
I didn't even realize that's what manifest... No, wait.
Oh, is that wrong? Am I making the wrong connection?
I think you're making the right
connection. It's like, we're gonna conquer everything, but we're gonna give them our greatness while also allowing them to still be...
Yeah, no. It's just like, we're so great,
we want to give this greatness to everyone else, but also you're still harming a bunch of people in the process?
Exactly, yeah. And even within that, try to expand it not only within our realm, but within other dimensions.
As a viewer, are we supposed to sympathize with this character or not?
I would say that there's definitely a portion of time where you want to sympathize with this character.
They really set it up like that.
Okay, because right now they sound pretty awful.
Oh yeah, no, that character is trash.
Did they get a redemption arc? Is that...
No.
Oh, does... Okay, other question.
They
does
go any... full villain.
Oh god.
So Lotor is presented as Zarkon's son, and is later on revealed to be half Altaian.
Did they ever address how that happens?
End of season two is when you meet Lotor.
So do you remember Hagar the Witch? The old crone lady that appears at Zarkon's side for a good portion of the season.
Oh, yes.
Hagar is revealed to be Zarkon's partner, and prior to the development of Voltron, they're completely normal. They want world peace, and they're all like, we're gonna be happy and helpful, and I'm Galra. I like, the Galra are still all about power, but it's not quite in the I'm going to be world conquering. It's in the we just want what's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole origin story of how they create Voltron. It involves this object or power source called Quintessence, which is functionally a life source that is present in all beings, but they are able to get it when traveling within different dimensions. Like, it exists as a power source in this sort of space between dimensions. The original Voltron team, not the Paladins we know, the ones that piloted the Lions prior, discover this and use it to build the line. Zarkon, seeing the power that this force can give, wants more, and wants to use it to spread his quote-unquote peace across the world. And in experimenting with it, they realize that it's extremely unstable. Exposure to it over long periods of time causes you to go insane.
Fun!
It kills both Zarkon and his wife, and is used to bring them back to life, although it causes them to go and lose themselves.
Hagar more so than Zarkon.
So yeah, at the point where we are introduced to them in the actual show themselves, Hagar has suffered from massive memory loss and is sort of this shell of their former self.
Okay, yeah. Interesting.
To note, Hagar gets a redemption arc.
Oh, I was gonna ask if any of the characters got, if that was something that happened to anybody in the show.
I would barely call that a redemption arc.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that they kind of posit their evil in... It's like they're evil because of something outside of their control versus they're evil because, and like in it's, and totally correct me if I'm wrong, because again, I have no idea what I'm talking about. It's their actions, their thirst for power that did ultimately cause their transformation, but transformation of them into like the evil that we see is beyond themselves, right?
Yes. Although later on in the series, Hagar does get her memories back and comes to herself as a full realized person.
And is she still all evil, or is that when she gets kind of redeemed?
So Lotor, prior to this, had discovered a group of Altaians that had survived the destruction of Altea and keeps them hidden from Zarkon to keep them safe, and promises them that he's going to be their savior and find them this sort of new Neverland where they can live out the rest of their lives. And that's all we really know for a while. And eventually it's revealed that he's actually slowly taking them out one by one and promising them this new Neverland that they can go live the rest of their life and just draining them of their quintessence.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, Lotor is really, really a dick.
He's extremely cunning. You genuinely believe that he can be a good person when you are first introduced to him. And then he just goes full villain. Because for a while, Lotor works with the Paladins in trying to get back his rightful seat at the throne. And eventually all that information is revealed and they have to turn on him.
Yeah.
And then he... in an attempt to mine for more quintessence, creates another pseudo-Voltron and goes insane from the quintessence exposure and just goes full villain and tries to murder everyone.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Oh, he gets
it's real dicey there.
The opposite of a redemption arc.
Yep.
Aww.
Which is...
he gets the villain cut.
It's so bad. This sort of representation of like growing up in an abusive family and trying to do good despite having all of these horrible ideas drilled into your head from birth, and then they just sort of don't address that and have him have like this very undignified death. And so they get into a fight. It causes a potential rift in space-time that could destroy all of this dimension. And in sealing that rift, the Castle of Lions is destroyed. Voltron disappears for, I think it's like 10 years?
Whoa. Yeah. And, oh, so do we see all the characters 10 years later?
Well, so Voltron and all of the Paladins disappear for 10 years. When they reappear, it is as though no time passed for them.
I was really excited for like a real glow up where we see them all like hugged.
Oh no, you do not get that. They do not age.
We don't get like a cool like. Don't get a nice like How to Train Your Dragon where suddenly Hiccup.
One picture in the final episode.
You're like, what's happening to me?
No, nobody looks like a grown man after this.
No, you get that one picture in the final episode.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true.
You get all one of picture of all of them together, like after everything is said and done, and then they're like,
Can I just say, I am here for like a good anime glow up, because you don't typically get to see a lot of shift in appearance in animated shows, right? Like, that's the hallmark. You have the characters and they look the way they look. And then sometimes there's some, when there's like a big shift, sometimes you get a shift in appearance. Like, I don't know, like in She-Ra, when Adora, there's like a big moment where her like outfit kind of changes, where she's changed, and same with Glimmer. And I guess you get that in Avatar with when like Zuko cuts his hair and all that stuff, but you don't typically get to see animated characters change. And I am here for a good anime glow up where all of a sudden you see a character and they like have a cool new outfit, or like their hair is different, or you know, in Hiccup's case, he grew facial hair, or like with Kipo in The Age of the Wonder Beast, when you see her like grown up in the last episode, I lost it. It makes me so excited. I don't know what it is, but I just love it. It gives me the thrills and the chills. I like a good
time jump because of that mystery.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I like when people got beefs with like their old friends and after a time jump. Like, it's worth it.
Yes. Ah, again, one of those things that we could have gotten from Voltron and we just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They reappear some amount of time later. They keep referring to the time as the unnecessarily... It's like 10 doboshes or whatever.
My God. Jesus Christ. It kind of drives me insane, all of the random words that they have. And, like, I get it, because it does create atmosphere, and it's, like, fun, and you really get to feel like you're in another world. But, like, every time that, what is it? Like, whenever they're talking about the ship, and whenever Karan says anything, and he's just, like, yelling random words, and I'm like, what is even happening?
I kept wondering if, like, they were going to run out of shit that they could make up. Just verbally, and their diction was just going to have to start trending towards like actual languages. Like, if they were going to have to quietly start shifting into speaking any level of Arabic. And when I started to realize that wasn't going to happen was around season 7. And I was like, oh, they really fleshed these ideas out for just the words. Man, all right, we're going to be here a while. We're going to be here a while.
We have created some fantastic terminology.
Oh, this yes. World. In this world. Not character development. Terminology.
Which, I mean, is an important thing. I think that, you know, it bothers me in the first couple of seasons where I, like, don't... I'm not really invested enough to care about what they're saying. But, like, I can respect some good world building that has these new words that carry through. But when it comes... develop the language more than they develop the characters, I'm gonna be a little mad about it.
And it's not even, like, a wash. It's not even, like... You're losing something, but you're not gaining something. You're just only losing something at that point. Yeah. The gains don't outweigh the loss.
So anyway, from that point on, Lotor has disappeared. The world does not know where they are. The universe does not know where they are. They're, as far as they know, they're dead. Magar sort of tries to pull Kingpin from Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse and does this whole thing where she's like, I'm gonna go into every other reality until I find one where my son and husband are alive. And yeah. I don't care what damage that does to the rest of the universe. That's what I'm doing.
What cracks me up is that this predates Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and I'm like, this isn't like a who stole whose idea. It's more like, is this idea that unoriginal, and have we seen it before somewhere? And we're all just doing a lot of copy-paste, or nah?
You know, it's like, true. I'm sure Shakespeare wrote some sort of weird, ultra-dimensional, I'm gonna find my family in some other
dimension. How do we know Macbeth isn't about alternate dimensions?
I mean, Midsummer Night's Dream gets pretty crazy.
Midsummer Night's Dream always sounds like it was written on acid, until you watch Cats, honestly.
Oh my God.
It's true.
Now I really want to be responsible for creating, like, the most atrocious crossover of A Midsummer Night's Dream and Cats. Oh, I could make something really beautiful and really awful.
Find me off the air. I have an idea that I'll throw your way. Actually, you know what? I'll say it on here. You know how there's the concept of take a movie, replace every character except for one with Muppets? Take Midsummer Night's Dream, just replace everybody except one character with just Cats, but in the style of the Cats from Cats by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh my God.
I hate it so much.
And then, okay.
And character names stay the same from Cats into Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay, and then can Bottom just be straight human?
Yep.
Like, no CGI or anything? Like, the character that is supposed to be the most weird visually is just a normal human being?
Yes. Have him be played by Dennis Quaid's son. The one who doesn't think he's hot.
Amazing. And it could be like, again, iambic pentameter. You could turn it into this like really horrible crossover of a
musical. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize Jellicle Cats fell into the iambic pentameter.
Yeah. Oh, no, but I'm just saying because of the, you know, the iambic pentameter and because of the structure of Shakespeare's writing, you could turn it into like a really atrocious quasi-speech, quasi-musical where you're like, are these characters speaking or singing or trying to rap really horribly? Like, what is going on? And it could just be the cherry on top of the cake of this horrible, uncanny valley experience where like the visuals are atrocious. The auditory senses are just bombarded with stuff that doesn't make sense. But like, you kind of have to like it because it's Shakespeare.
Yeah. And honestly, it would have more of a plot than Cats.
Yeah.
Cats is just vibes.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Cats is, first up, as a musical, Cats is very simplistic.
Cats is atrocious. I am really upset.
That's a nice way to put that.
All right. Well, that's 20 minutes of audio I can't use.
No, this is 20 minutes of audio you cut out, you put at the back end of this podcast as like a little, as a little bonus, a little episode. This for the people. This for the people.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you could totally take an episode where you're like, do you want to hear all of the random rants we go on? It could be like, it could be like a Christmas gift, holiday gift.
We have over at Nerdcraft Nation, there's like an audio of me just going off about random media theories, and it's just like 10 minutes. It features the ESPN one I told you guys about earlier, and one of the old Gossip Girl ones, I think, as well. Oh, and why HBO Max exists.
I'm very angry at HBO Max, simply for the sole reason that Infinity Train got really upsetting and sad after it switched to HBO Max, and I still can't get over it.
I still haven't watched it.
Oh my god.
I think it's one of the best animated shows to have come out in the past decade.
It's really good, but I was not ready for like the shift in tone that happens over the course of the three seasons.
Does it just get gradually more serious? Or
Okay, let's get back on track.
Nadia and I are fairly emotional individuals, and a question that has been brought up in almost every single episode that I don't think Nadia will have an answer for here. Did this show at any point make you cry?
Oh, no. I am a very even-keel person. I attribute that to a lot of my weird childhood, what's the word? Not traumas, but like just weird childhood things. I've had a lot of strange things happen throughout my life and a lot of sad and depressing things, but like this didn't, and I couldn't figure out why, but like, I'll put it like this. I sometimes just feel I've cried during television shows very few times. There has to be like good, deep connections for me. And this show at times, just like the character development undercuts that for that to happen for me. Granted, I have laughed out loud so hard at this show, though.
That's good. That is a good thing to have. Yeah. Like we,
yeah, Hunk is a hero.
Oh, the comedy in the show is gold.
Oh, spot on.
Nadia, am I correct in assuming that your answer is also no?
I mean, yeah, obviously my answer is no. But I would like to say that it does not take a lot to make me cry, and that also literally the first episode of She-Ra made me cry because of the theme song. And because I thought that it was so powerful and I loved it so much. And then I cried every single time I then heard that theme song. So literally every single episode of She-Ra made me cry. Not like ball, but like every time I heard the song, I would get like a little bit teary eyed and like, you know, have to take a sec to like breathe out of it. But even the moments of, and again, I cry when stuff is really intensely happy, as we've already established. Like if there's a scene where you're just like, yeah, this is supposed to make me happy, I'm probably in the corner like happy crying. And one of the things that usually makes me at least tear up a little bit is like magical girl transformations. Like I just get a kick out of it. It makes me so excited. And I was kind of expecting to feel that the first time that Voltron like assembled fully.
Did you not feel it when they repeated the exact same 30-second sequence in every single episode?
I've been wondering if that was that. I was expecting for the first time at least to get a little bit emotional or like excited. Because, like I said, it doesn't take a lot to make me cry. And it doesn't have to be a sad thing. It can just be like, oh, wow, that was a powerful thing. I'm going to just cry a little bit because that's who I am. I don't find their transformation sequence particularly compelling. And again, maybe it's because I'm just like not into the battle aspect of it. But I was also disappointed with the theme song. The short answer is no, I did not cry.
I've cried more at Sailor Moon.
Do you cry, Andy?
I'm not ashamed to admit that I did cry exactly once in both of my watch throughs of this show.
I care to explain so I can vicariously feel some emotion.
So I cry during season 4, episode 2. This is an episode where Pidge up to this point has been very vehemently, I'm only here for my family. I want to find my family. My father and brother were on the Kerberos mission. They're lost. I need to find them. Once I do, I can either choose to be a paladin full wholeheartedly or just leave the team as is. And there's an episode where Pidge comes across a graveyard. It is a massive graveyard meant to commemorate the lives of individuals who died in this almost genocidal rage from Zarthon. And Pidge frantically searches for her family's names amongst the dead and finds her brother's name on one of the tombstones. And there's this like moment where it's just like, it's raining around her. She's just bawling her eyes out. And I just like, the pain that she feels is so heart-wrenching to me, especially because Pidge is one of the characters that has actually been developed up to that point. You really get the sense of like, she joined the space team and pretended to be male to be able to be in a position where she could find her father and her brother. And like, she's gone through this whole journey and literally traversed the universe for them only to find that a tombstone with her brother's name on it.
That totally would have made me cry.
Like, that hit me very hard. It's also followed up with a code embedded in the tombstone left by her brother to indicate that he is alive, but...
Wait, did she find him?
Yeah.
I also probably would have cried when she found him.
That scene is really well earned.
No, it absolutely is.
Oh, yeah. When they find each other, it's... Honestly, that really warmed my heart. I couldn't cry at the specific scene that you bring up, Andy, because I was like, they're too smart. Something's going on here.
Pretty much what we've established is that Pidge and Hunk are just the best characters in the show.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Cool.
Hunk is an icon.
But yeah, I respect that.
Hunk is a hunk.
Yeah. Oh, I just want to, like, they're the two characters where I'm like, I just want to be your friend. Like, I want to sit down. I want to make some good food with Hunk. I want to be excited and learn sciencey things from Pidge. Just...
I want to see what Hunk's intergalactic restaurant empire is like.
Oh my god.
Hunk does this thing where he just sort of like acts as an ambassador between like warring nations, where he's like, look, I made this meal with spices from your nation and meats from your nation, and see how you two work together. Now try this and love me. And it's really cute.
An angel. Does Hunk get, like, some actual character growth? Because I only really know him as the goofball. You mentioned that there's some bits where he goes off in the later seasons. Do we get to see him develop?
Not really. I think Hunk just sort of stays as, like, the foundation during all of that.
I mean, sometimes you do need a good foundation, and that's something else I can respect. Because, I think it only works in shows where you have a lot of volatile character growth in other characters, and sometimes you need that anchor who is consistent. And I think Uncle Iroh is a good example of that, where like pretty much is who he is throughout the entire show, but he's such a good character that you don't even
Toph.
You don't need the Toph's growth
also
from him.
A good example of that.
Toph gets a good amount of development though.
Not as much as the other characters.
She gets development, but her personality and character never really changes. She's always this bratty. Yeah.
She gets a lot of like front heavy development, where like the first few episodes of her with the show, of her with like the gang, it's good. Like, I think it's important to know how to have that balance between which characters shift and change and which characters stay the same. With Voltron, I guess just because you don't have that growth in the other characters, it doesn't feel as a purposeful choice to have this character stay consistent for a purpose. It's more of just like, okay, you've kind of failed to develop the character. And again, that's just me like putting judgment onto these creators, where like I could be totally wrong. I feel like that's how I interpret it as a viewer who has also not seen the end seasons. So a very uneducated viewer at that.
Feels weird bringing this up now, but it feels weird not bringing this up at all. So Lotor and Zarkon have a fight in season 5, episode 2. And in this fight, Lotor kills Zarkon.
This is the episode that you think should have ended the whole show, right?
Yes.
Wait, if I remember correctly.
It's very strange that, like, the death of a former main antagonist isn't like, a major episode. Like, it isn't a season finale, or at least a mid-season finale. And, honestly, I think there's an argument where you could absolutely, at that point, because Lotor has not been established as a villain, write it so that Lotor is just definitively a good person trying to disassemble the Galran Empire and have the murder of his father and the overcoming of this abusive relationship be where we end things. And this is the point at which I would say that the show is no longer worth watching.
Oh.
Yeah. It's kind of executed like it's supposed to be a red wedding, where you just go and you kill off a major character and you're supposed to get a big tone shift from that point forward. But it comes so early and they don't know what to do with it really after.
There's no real main antagonist from that point on. Hagar still is this former shell of themselves and is sort of working to try to put together the pieces of the fallen Galarian Empire. Lotor is working with the Voltron team in establishing himself as the Galarian leader. And there's no actual, like, antagonist for a while. So you sort of get the next few episodes are just the sort of, we're gonna twiddle around with our thumbs and not really do anything.
Aww.
Which, if they'd committed to, like, any real character development in those episodes, Sans antagonist probably actually would have really repaired this show to a certain degree.
I was gonna say that would be a great time to really just dive into the individual characters.
It's like I want to say 3 episodes of filler, and it just, you can skip that, go to episode 3, 4, 5, you can go to episode 6 and you can just pick up from there and just act like those 3 episodes don't exist. And it works.
It's too bad.
Granted, you get like a warlord political thriller episode, but like even that's not worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, I feel like, hey, we've talked about this before, how a lot of shows have the tendency to like, and typically again, it happens in a finale and not like episode 2 of a random season, but there'll be this really big reveal and then you'll just get a bunch of filler after it to like restart the next season. And I find it to be a really weird pattern where, you know, the big thing happens and then you just have a series of episodes where that big thing just doesn't matter and like doesn't come into play at all, and it picks up later.
Yes, kind the of, Steven Universe syndrome. I'm familiar with
that. And like, like I get it when it happens in a show where there's a cutoff in season, because, you know, typically a season ends and there's this big thing, and then when the season picks up, there's been hiatus or, you know, time away, and it kind of, you're taking the time to get back into the show. Again, it's not my favorite thing, but like I do understand it, but it's so weird that same thing would play out in the very middle of a season, because I always just assumed it was like, it was a seasonal thing. You know, you have to wait before the next season, and this is just kind of the way that they get you back into the flow of the show and the characters and how they bring you in again. But it's weird for like a big thing to happen and then for the exact same trope to play out just in the middle of a season where you don't have that wait time.
Yeah, it's really growing pains in terms of coming to terms with the release schedule that Netflix asks for. Mm. Because a lot of animation is so accustomed to, we are releasing weekly and we need every episode to be able to be entered in on at any point because we don't really have control over when people join in on an episode, especially when the targeted demographic is a younger generation that they believe does not have the attention span to be able to keep up with these serialized narratives over the course of several weeks, which like in Voltron I feel does kind of suffer from that, where there are points where it does feel like it is written as though it was supposed to be a weekly airing, and the whole Netflix, we're gonna put the entire season online immediately sort of takes away from that.
I feel a little bit bad for not liking the beginning. I'm just gonna put my guilt out there because I know it's fun and good, and I feel like I need to give myself a little slap on the wrist for not enjoying it. It's no, like a thing. I don't know, I can look at it and be like, yeah, I should enjoy this, but I just didn't. And I feel like I need to be like, sorry.
Yeah, I was about to say, you shouldn't feel bad, right? But I get what you're saying there. I get it. Honestly, I just wish the show was better, because Voltron is just such a great idea of an 80s show, and execution just clearly isn't there all the way through for every single aspect. Visually, though, I love the show visually. Like, it's just a good, it's like good brain candy visually.
And maybe that's part of where I lost on it, because I've always kind of had to watch it while I've been multitasking with something else. So I haven't really gotten to just sit down and focus on the visuals, because I'm like making my breakfast or like folding laundry.
I feel ya.
So maybe, okay. So I was going to say, maybe I won't finish it, but maybe I'll finish season two. I'll just only watch it when I can actually give it attention and see if that shifts my ability to enjoy the beginning.
That's fair.
This is good. I am leaving with a goal and a purpose, and this is where I needed to be. Good, yes.
Absolutely. I think this is a show that has a lot of promise. I think that a lot of the, and even like ignoring the whole it's just a copy-pasted Power Rangers mecha thing, the whole your lions relate to your character development, and Voltron itself is this concept of a connection of a found family all working together to be this defender of peace. Like, I'm not going to say I'm a lover of friendship is the answer to everything and the power of friendship saves the day, but like, this is the story that would get that and get that done right. And I think that the series that we have currently has a very strong foundation of doing that and has a very strong start to get that done. And then I don't want to say it's the incompetence of the writers or any of the creative staff. They clearly have smart, talented people working behind the scenes to get as good a show as they can get out. And we've seen what network interference can do to a show, both here and with their prior project on Korra. And I think this show is extremely important in terms of its impact in the animation industry. I think this show is incredibly important in terms of its impact on Netflix itself and how different companies interact with them, especially DreamWorks. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I do really like the series. I would definitely rewatch at least the first four seasons again. I can't say that I would continue past that. But there are definitely good things in those later seasons as well.
Yeah. I'll say it. Season 5, episode 2, that fight scene is really damn good.
Oh, it is a very well
made fight scene. It is. Yeah.
That is one of the things that I do remember being yelled at about by my coworker. He was like, it was just so good. So I'm like filling in the gaps now. I'm like, oh, okay, now I'm understanding what he was talking about. But
yeah, I'm rewatching Gundam Wing, like the old Gundam Wing show, and it's very comparable in my opinion.
All right, I think that wraps up everything that we wanted to discuss here. We have been Animation Meditation. Chris, is there anything you would like to plug?
I'm just going to plug Nerdcraft Nation. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Nerdcraft Nation. It's spelled how it sounds. NerdCraftNation. And yeah, we've got an episode with Andy actually coming out probably around the same time this drops about Legend of Korra that we were really happy with. And Andy is hilarious on it. What else we have to plug? We have an episode coming out about Wonder Woman, in which Wonder Woman 1984, in which you hear some of the real angriest DC takes in a while from any of my other hosts. And yeah, I think that's about it. Oh, and we have an episode coming out on The Mandalorian sooner or later. Yeah, featuring absolutely. A very excited Austin Hall.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to hear more from me, or if you want to hear more from Chris, definitely check out that episode. Definitely check out Nerdcraft Nation.
Yeah, and thank you for having me, you guys. I've listened to a couple episodes, and you've got a great thing going here. You both have great banter, and that's really what you need in this space, honestly.
Well, if you'd like to reach out to us, feel free to email or tweet. We are AnnieMedPod @gmail.com and Twitter. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Later.